How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
With the third pick in the NBA draft, the Boston Celtics select... I don't know. Do you know? I don't know.
It's time. You want the best Celtics talk around? Here it is. This is the Rain and Jays podcast. Here's John and Jay.
Oh, so much to get to. We are in mid-June, draft around the corner, free agency around the corner. So much to discuss. So, Jay King, let's do it. Third pick of the NBA draft. It's clearly going to be Jamal Murray if he's hitting 79 out of 100 free throws against nobody in a workout, right?
That's the guy. Three pointers, John.
What I say?
Free throws. So, yeah, we're going to go with three pointers there.
Yeah, sure. Three pointers.
Yeah, it's Jamal Murray. I don't think that shooting record, first of all, was as impressive as it initially sounded, because he said, "Ooh, I broke the shooting record." Turns out, guys have broken 80 before. That was a shooting record from this year, which was previously held by Kyle Wilcher, a Gonzaga big man who may not even get drafted. So it wasn't like he came in and broke Stephen Curry's old record or anything like that. He can shoot, though, and obviously because they're the Celtics and because they have no shooters, that is right. A skill that will make him attractive at number three, especially with his size, his ability to handle the ball, all that stuff. It still cracks me up, though, to come in for an individual workout. What the hell is the point? Come on. How much are you going to learn about a guy when he's going through drills 1-on-0?
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. You can put any NBA-level player, and Jamal Murray is an NBA-level player. He's going to be a top five pick potentially. Those guys can play ball. Even bad shooters can shoot against nobody and shoot fairly well. It's the game. It's the reps. It's the your legs feel like jelly because of the nerves, and you get whacked on a screen, and how do you respond to that? So it's like what's his name? Yi Jin Lan with the chair drills from a few years ago. Everybody's like, whoa, look at him go against those chairs. And he earned the nickname the Chairman after those workouts against chairs. And he got that high draft pick, and he was a bust. Not that Jamal Murray's going to be a bust, but individual draft workouts against nobody. People love to overreact to stuff like that, but there's a lot that goes into this beyond that. These individual workouts are very low on the list of what teams use to decide whether they're going to draft a player or not.
Yeah, I mean, they know Jamal Murray can shoot. That's a factor when they go into the draft. They care more that he shot 40% while taking 8 threes per game at the college level as an 18-year-old, 19-year-old freshman at Kentucky. They don't care so much that he shot 79 of 100 on unguarded shots in a workout. Let's be honest there. I do think he's an intriguing prospect. I do think he's one of the guys they could consider there. I just don't think his shooting performance will have an impact one way or another.
Yeah. Now, the thing about that third pick, like we said in our last show with Kevin O'Connor, It's still way up in the air. No one has solidified a spot. None of the experts know exactly who's going to be there. I'm looking at just three different mock drafts. Draft Express has Marquise Chris, who I know you want to talk about. Buddy Hield on NBADraft.net. And Chad Ford has Murray third on his big board, but I think in his mock draft he has Chris Dunn. So four different names from three different sources. No one knows exactly where the Celtics are going to go. The Celtics at this point probably don't even know where they're going to go.
Yeah, and that's the thing. After 1 and 2, and it looks, I think, more and more like it's going to be Ben Simmons 1, Brandon Ingram 2, somebody else three.
Right.
But there's like five or six guys, and they all have a case, and they're all slightly imperfect fits. We've talked about this before, whether they're young and may not make an impact right away, or whether they're guards where the Celtics are already deep, or whatever it is. There are very few good fits for right now for the Celtics at number three. I think all those guys are intriguing, and all of them have potential. And who? I mean, I would hate to be picking number three in this draft, because there are going to be very good players available. The problem is, it is really difficult right now to judge who's going to be that really good player. And that's always the case. But I think especially in this draft, there's a lack of separation among a lot of these talents. And Danny Ainge is going to have to earn his money. His staff is going to have to earn its money with this number three pick. Because this is, I mean, this is a huge pick. This is, they won 48 games. They have all this cap space. They have all this flexibility. If they pick a very good player at number three, it doesn't have to be a star. If they pick someone who's going to be a starter in the NBA, that's a game changer. That is a game changer. And that is the type of pick that could, whether it's by trade or whatever, just really open things up for them. And so I think there's a lot of pressure on this pick. There's a lot of pressure for Ainge to make the right decision. And whether it's trade, keep the pick, select somebody who is going to pan out, or trade the pick and find some guy who's going to help the Celtics get to the next step. So, I mean,
yeah.
poor Danny, number three in this draft. Like, yeah, it's great to have number three pick. It's great to have your choice, but it's a tough choice.
It's a very tough choice. And so let me bring in one of these Twitter questions to really pop this conversation off. It comes from Jeff Simpson, one of the Reds Army contributors. It's a great question. Has or should Danny Ainge change his best player available approach to the draft now that the Celtics are closer to contending and instead draft more for need or fit? It's a great question, because the draft for need or fit has the potential to become Sam Bowie over Michael Jordan, because the Portland Trailblazers in that draft already had very great athletic wings and didn't need a guy like Jordan, so they went with fit and drafted Bowie.
I will say there's probably not going to be the next Michael Jordan,
sure,
in this draft.
Of course not. But the point is, you could miss out on a guy drafting for need, that if a guy is a really good athlete, like let's just say it's Jamal Murray. Well, the Celtics have a bunch of guards. Or if it's Chris Dunn, the Celtics have a bunch of guards. And you say, well, we don't need any more guards. But if Murray's the guy, if he is the guy and the best player available, and you say, we don't need a bunch of guards, we're going to take Chris. And let's say Chris doesn't pan out. Then you sit there and you go back and you second guess. You say, well, we got Chris because we didn't need any more guards. But when you look at the guy, He was so good. Why? You figure it out. You figure it out. You trade somebody. You bench somebody. You do something to get a talent that good. That's the downfall of drafting for need rather than best player available. However, then you have this best player available approach that you can take, and say you do take Murray or Dunn, and you now depreciate the value of the guys you have. Because when you turn around and say, well, we're going to trade Avery Bradley, or maybe even trade Isaiah Thomas, and they say, well, you have 50 guards on your roster, you need to get rid of one. We're not going to give you a lot for this guy because we know you need to get rid of him. So you drop the value. So the answer to Jeff's question is, I don't know. I don't know, because there's a definite downside to both scenarios. The only thing is, if a player is so good that you have to take him, then you go with the best player available.
But I think to the Celtics, the best player available approach is even more important at number three. Because I think later in the draft, 16, 23, whatever, you're okay with getting a role player. Really, all you want from that point, all you can reasonably expect is to get a role player. At number three, there are going to be really good players available. And there are going to be more really good players available than if you're later in the draft. So I think for them, it's even more important. You're going to have this guy for 4 years on his rookie contract, which, as we've talked about before, is more important with the exploding salary cap to have a guy as a rookie on that deal. It's going to look great. And then you're going to have him for 5 more years or whatever it is on his contract extension. So you can have this player for 9 years. It would be so short-sighted to say, you know what, Jamal Murray's a guard. If you think he's going to be a star, if you think he has the highest chance of becoming a star, you need to say, you know what, I know we have guards right now. All these guys are tradable. All these guys have value. We can figure that out, but we need to draft the best player available because we need someone who is going to take us to the next level. We have enough good players. And I think that's the Celtics approach. And I really do believe that at number three, they believe it's more important to have the best talent and the guy who has the best chance to become a real impact player rather than just, you know, a rotation guy who can fill a need, whether it's shooting or rim protecting or whatever else may be the case.
Yeah, I think in this particular draft, the Celtics, I mean, as much as I loved last year's team, they were so easy to like and they worked so hard, but there still needs to be a general upgrade in talent. The trepidation that I have is you upgrade the talent, but then you get younger. Are you taking a step back to develop? Where are we? Because the thing here is, to Jeff's point, is they're closer to contending. They were the fifth seed, but they were in a four-way tie for the third best record in the East.
But how close are they to contending?
That's the question.
They got smacked by the Hawks. The Hawks got smacked by the Cavs. The Cavs are in the process of getting smacked by the Warriors. So it's like, they're good in the East. Yes, they're a good team already. They're not close. And obviously, they have a young team. They're going to get a year older. They should get better. But if you let Evan Turner leave and you replace him with somebody who is younger, has more upside, has higher value to other teams across the league, that's a good thing. Whether it costs you a few wins next year or not, that's not the biggest issue here. The biggest issue is getting assets and taking that next step. And I really do think they're in a weird position because it feels like they're close. Obviously, they have something to protect. And by that, I mean they have a good team. And you don't want to lose your good team. You don't want to lose your good players. But you also want to have the best assets and the best chance at long-term greatness. So
you know what this is? This is the purgatory discussion. This is, and people talk about, and I think people are wrong when they say this. They say being the seventh or eighth seed, that's purgatory. I don't think that is correct at all. The Celtics right now are in that area. This is where you get caught. And this is, I think, where the Hawks had gotten caught for a long time.
The Hawks have been caught for their entire existence.
Yeah.
As the three or four seed.
This is, to me, this is purgatory. Because when you're the eighth seed and you're fighting for the eighth seed, you can sit there and say, like, we're a playoff team. But when you're sitting here at the three, four, five seed, it's very easy to get caught up in, look how close we are. All we need is this. All we need is this one guy or these two guys. And look at how good we can be. We could be a contender. You're so close that it's insanely difficult to make those decisions to get rid of guys who contributed to this success because you have that fear of taking a step back. So getting rid of a guy like Evan Turner, Jared Sullinger, you know, even an Avery Bradley, who was a huge – when you talk about trades or re-signing or things like that, there's a serious downfall. You trade Avery Bradley, there's like, hold, but he was first team all defense. He hit some huge shots. He hit that game winner in Cleveland. Like that, you can't get rid of that guy. We need that guy. But maybe that's the guy that can only get you to this fighting for home court in the first round. Maybe you do need to take a step back and make a trade or not re-sign a guy, or go for a draft and pick Murray, let's say, over a guy like you, Avery Bradley. And when a guy – so this tweet here from at Evan Time, if the Seas draft Murray at three, what effect will it have on the roster, i.e., will they need to trade a guard? When that discussion is had and you trade away pieces that helped you get to this point in order to draft this young guy, that sounds crazy to some people, to a lot of people, because we're right here and – are we going to take that step back to develop this young guy with the hope that he's going to, that one step back leads to two steps forward?
Yeah, and I think obviously the Celtics are in a really good position because, yes, for now they may be in this purgatory, whatever you call it, but they also have cap space and they have the flaming Brooklyn Nets who are completely in ashes and trying to put themselves back together. It's not like they're the Hawks where they're destined to be in the middle forever because they've set themselves up so well for this stage. Now, that doesn't automatically mean they're going to get a great player at number three. It doesn't mean they're going to trade for a great player. It doesn't mean Kevin Durant is coming to Boston no matter how many crab legs he would have waiting for him. I think, you know, it's huge for them that they are this good and they will have these options. And I think the trust in Danny Ainge right now around Boston should be really high. He has made all the right moves for a long time, and he's shown he's not going to do anything short-sighted. There is nothing short-sighted he's going to pull the trigger on. If he makes a move, it's going to be one that sets the Celtics up well for a while. And maybe they have to take a short step back now, but as you said, you know, sometimes that's necessary. And the good thing is you don't have to make a decision right away. You can draft Jamal Murray and have Marcus Smart play a little more small forward and have Murray take Evan Turner's minutes as like that combo guard ball handler. And you could do that, or Chris Dunn, whoever it may be. You know, they have right now, they have enough pieces in place where they can draft any of these guys. And it may not make perfect sense, but whatever, you know, they don't need it to make perfect sense right now. They need it to make perfect sense a couple years down the road, or whenever they bring in those superstar pieces where they can finally contend.
Let's expand this out a little bit, because at AZ Escobar 1 says, to you, Jay King, my man, any buzz or smoke regarding the third pick? Seems like Bender or Murray if the pick, if it's not traded, unless Danny is being coy. Well, Danny's always being coy. Danny Ainge, his best skill might be the ability to say something without actually saying something.
It's amazing how much he says without saying anything.
It's really a very finely honed skill, because after every interview, you sit there and you say, oh, wow, man, I feel like I've learned a lot. Except every interview is basically, we'll do what's best for the team. We'll listen to trade offers. We'll make the calls. And we're going to prepare to draft the best player available.
There was one super comical quote at his press conference a couple weeks ago where he was like, we're going to look at 22-year-olds, 19-year-olds, international players, American players. We made trades back. And it's like he listed every single option they could possibly do. And he's like, so that's what we're going to do.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, no kidding. That's what you're going to do. Like that's what everybody does. But there was no insight whatsoever to the process. And maybe that is the insight to the process, that they are still looking through all these things and hoping something big comes through and evaluating all these draft prospects. They still have, you know, a couple weeks to go until the draft. But, yeah, he is a master at saying a lot while saying absolutely nothing. And, I mean, as we said earlier, there are four different mock drafts with four different guys going to the Celtics. And part of that is because there's not a lot of separation in people's eyes, but part of that is because the Celtics aren't tipping their cap one way or the other about what they're going to do.
Yeah, it's amazing. And
like I don't think that was the right phrase. Was it tipping their cap? No. Well, whatever. Whatever the phrase was, put it in there.
Tipping their hand?
Yeah, is that the phrase? There you go. Yep, that's the one. That's why we work.
That's we fix each other's mistakes. Free throws, three-pointers, caps, hands, whatever. So there is no buzz about the third pick other than everybody is – Bender's going to come in and work out for the Celtics. That's going to be, I think, the most intriguing workout for the Celtics. There's still some question about whether Dunn's going to come in and where Dunn will go and whether – is the. I think one of the storylines that we need to pay attention to is whether the Lakers are going to do something other than – take Ingram if they're going to get enamored by Dunn or
Chris, maybe. Chris seems to have a lot of buzz right now.
Yeah.
Or who knows, Bender comes over from Israel and works out for them, and maybe he wows them. You never know what could happen, but I would be really, at this point, shocked if it doesn't go Simmons, Ingram, 1-2, and then the Celtics, whoever, player X at number 3.
So, okay, so all of these players are coming in to work out, and now we've got a question from at Celtics blog, the one and only Jeff Clark, with this fantastic question. If you could ask all of the potential draft prospects just one question to evaluate them, what will it be? That is an amazing question.
I think mine would be, who's your favorite player? I think you can learn something about, like, Marquise Chris's favorite player is Rudy Gay. And maybe that doesn't mean a lot. Like, he's from Sacramento. Rudy Gay is on the Kings. You know, and so it makes sense. It makes sense. Yes, I'm a really long guy who roots for the Kings, and my favorite player is this other long guy who roots for the Kings.
Sure.
But when your favorite player is Rudy Gay, like, that, I don't know if that's a red flag. That might be a red flag. I love this guy who's really stupid and probably has definitely limited several teams because he cannot fully grasp team basketball. And in Marquise Chris's case, like, those are kind of the questions about him. Is he going to develop into a high IQ player because he's only played the game for 4 or 5 years? I would feel much more comfortable. And I'm kind of joking. I'm mostly joking here. But I would feel a lot more comfortable with him if he was like, you know what, I've watched a lot of Andre Iguodala, and I love the way Iguodala plays. And
yeah.
Like a guy who uses his athleticism in so many different ways. And I'd be like, oh, that Chris guy, now he can really do, like, if he just watches Iggy and has respect for all those traits, awesome. If he's Rudy Gay and wants to, like, be taking contested mid-range jumpers, then you might have issues. And obviously, right, I'm reading far too into it. But maybe that does matter.
That's a good question. That's a good question. No, I can see what you're saying, because when you have a certain style, you tend to gravitate to players with that certain style. So,
although that was not true in my case. My favorite players were, like, Grant Hill and Steve Nash, the most selfless players, and I was more just like a bombs away chucker. Like, I was J.R. Smith with no athleticism.
Why do you say was? Like, you're not still.
Well, J.R. Smith occasionally
You're trying to tell me your game has
shots.
Evolved.
No, he occasionally makes shots. I have become a fatter version, and I don't make anything anymore. So I used to be a less athletic version of J.R. Smith. Now I'm like Antoine Walker in his fattest stage.
Okay, let that image simmer a little bit. You and Antoine could go play blackjack at Foxwoods. So my question would be, I think what I would do is, I would put two envelopes in front of the player. One would have Charles Barkley on it. The other would have Robert Horry on it. And I'd say, you right now have a choice to pick one of those two careers. Whose career would you choose right now? And see what they say. Because the Charles Barkley career, the Charles Barkley career is the superstar career. The big-time contracts, the big money, the big endorsements, no rings.
You know what's sad? There are probably guys in this draft who are like, who's Robert Horry?
Right. And now, I don't like Robert Horry necessarily, and I think his career is overblown, but he's got all those rings, he's been part of winning teams, and he hit huge shots. There's no doubt about that. He hit key shots. So the question isn't necessarily what would you prefer. The question is, would you be okay if your career went down a path where you were a role player on winning teams, or do you just prefer to be the guy? And a lot of these guys, they can be the guy, and there's merit to being the guy, the guy who wants to be the one, to go out there and be the one that takes all the big shots and is the focal point. But here you are going into the draft, your potential third pick. Are you okay if your career becomes Robert Horry and you're a role player? Maybe you go to a couple different teams. Yeah, you'll get the opportunities to hit big shots, but you're never going to be the guy. Are you okay with that? And then we can read into that. And there's that goes into a lot of tentacles. How you answer, like, are you okay with that? Are you not willing to work to be better? Are you okay with being – do you want to be the guy at the total disregard of your teammates? There's a lot of tentacles to that answer, to see how they answer. But that would be my question.
Robert Horry, he's a fascinating guy to me, because how good would he be in today's NBA? Stretch four, like, could guard anyone.
Yeah. You can go back.
I mean, he was really, really good anyway. And
sure. And there's a reason why he lasted that long.
Yeah.
But you can go back through time and find guys who fizzled out that nowadays would be maybe sought after. And maybe they wouldn't become superstars, but they would have had longer careers, maybe more productive careers, and would have made some more money. But that's just how it is, man. Once upon a time, I remember the first time Kevin McHale started taking threes. I'm like, what the hell are you doing, man? Get the hell back into the post. Go back where you belong. And nowadays, people are like, why isn't he taking more threes?
Yeah.
Like, that's a huge development for him. So that's just what it is. Once upon a time, tweener was a negative. We would be talking on this podcast 10 years ago, and we'd say, this guy's a tweener, and he has no position.
Draymond Green, such a tweener. Jay Crowder, such a tweener. Like, that hurt them when they were coming out. And now it's like, oh, you're a tweener? Fantastic.
Yeah. Now,
let's
now
scoop up.
No one says tweener anymore. That is not even part of the NBA lexicon. It is versatility. Now you're versatile, and that's good.
Yeah.
So that's the big thing. So it's amazing how times change.
Yeah, back to the question, though, about the one question you would ask prospects. Some teams, I know, really value – they ask prospects to compare themselves to a player in the NBA. And if the prospect comes in with an unrealistic comparison, like it's some second-round prospect, and he's like, yeah, you know, I'm like Allen Iverson, then they're like, nah, probably not the guy for us. You know, but if they come in like, yeah, I want to come in and play like Jay Crowder or somebody else that makes sense, they're like, okay, this guy he's self-aware and he knows he's not a superstar and he's willing to fit. So that's kind of like your question. So there are teams who really do value that question when they have interviews. And I think part of it is just judging, does a guy have a real grasp of who he is and who he probably will become or should become in the best case scenario.
Yeah. Self-awareness is tough because a lot of these guys at this level, to this point in their lives, they've always been the best or one of the best. And it's hard for them to move into that next space where you're no longer going to be the best. Being the best player in high school, being the best player at your mid-level college or whatever, that's all great, but to get to this level and to say you now are competing against the best competition the world has to offer in this sport, how self-aware are you? And now that's not to say that you can't strive to be something, but if you're going to be that second round pick and think that you're just going to go out there and get 30 shots a game to get your offense, then maybe it's not going to work out, because that's the I'm totally drawing a blank on his name. Jimmer Fredette. It's the Jimmer Fredette attitude, that Jimmer was not aware enough of himself to come in and go down the path that the J.J. Redick went down. The J.J. Redick realized pretty quickly he's player of the year, and he realized pretty quickly that he's not going to be the superstar in the NBA. He adjusted. He made a really good adjustment, is now thriving. Jimmer did not, and he goes to the D-League, and now he dominates the D-League, and that only reinforces his thought that, hey, if I get 30 shots a game, I can be pretty good. But no, you can't, because you're not going to get those 30 shots a game in this league. You can't run your offense through Jimmer Fredette in this league, and now he's just going to go away.
And so, you definitely cannot have a defense with Jimmer Fredette on your team. Yeah.
No. So that's kind of where these questions all tend to go. So that's the draft portion of our conversation. Let's turn to the guys who are currently in the NBA because Danny Ainge has the potential to trade these picks and trade his players, and that's another huge possibility. So last night, we're recording on Saturday. Last night, we watched the Golden State Warriors take a 3-1 lead on the Cleveland Cavaliers, which Jay referenced earlier in the show. Kevin Love did not start. Kevin Love did not play down the stretch. Kevin Love scored 11 points on just 6 shots, 5 rebounds, a very pedestrian night for Kevin Love off the bench. And now he is going to be blamed for a lot. And we've heard Sean Devaney, I believe, had that piece in, was it, or was it Mark Stein? That I think it was Devaney that had the, if this fizzles out, if this goes poorly and the Warriors do close us out 4-1, the auction for Kevin Love will begin, and the price will now seemingly be low. Now, the question is, how low does it go? And we've got questions on Twitter about this. Dane Harshman, do you think Love is coming to Boston? Who would you give up? What draft picks would you give up for him? So, interesting scenario with Kevin Love.
The Kevin Love question is a really tough one for me to answer, because there are just so many questions. Is he fizzling out in Cleveland because he can't fit with LeBron James and he's a bit piece in an offense that's not designed well for a guy like him? Or is that part of it and he's also not even close to the player he was 2 years ago? Because he's had knee issues, he's had shoulder issues, I want to say he's had back issues. Like, there have been some physical issues with him. He's no longer the rebounder he used to be, which is a big piece. He's not a good defender. But if he can go back to averaging 26 and close to 12 rebounds a game, like sure, yeah. You want that guy on your team. Hell yeah. But if it's something else and his play has diminished, and I don't watch closely enough, I haven't looked back at his tapes with Minnesota to see what the difference is athletically or whether it's just fit. And if it's just fit, then yeah, you want Kevin Love. But if it's something else, then no, you don't want Kevin
Love.
Right.
And
there's
saying.
A huge difference between getting a 26 and 12 guy and getting a 17 and 8 guy who's going to be defensive, such a bad defensive liability that the Cavaliers choose to play Channing freaking Frye down the stretch. And that's just not a good idea against, you know, Stephen Curry, where you need quick bigs, and Channing Frye, just like Kevin Love, is not that guy.
Right. It is a very interesting question. I don't know who we would give up. Is the third pick for Kevin Love too much? I mean, that's a question now. A few years ago, we were talking about trading half our team for the guy. And there was talk. I remember that it was Warriors Klay Thompson for Kevin Love. Imagine if they had done that deal. Klay Thompson is, if Steph Curry didn't exist, Klay Thompson would be Steph Curry. Like, that would be.
You know who would be a perfect compliment to Kevin Love, though? Draymond Green.
Yeah, it's true.
Right?
It's true. It's true. But here's the thing. You look at big threes. The Celtics had their new big three with KG, Pierce, and Ray Allen. And then Miami had a big three with LeBron and Wade and Bosch. And what they did, those two teams did that Cleveland is not doing, the Celtics had three insanely complementary guys. You couldn't have three guys that worked more perfectly together. You had, they didn't occupy the same space. They worked together in the offense. They were at the same points in their careers where they were all willing to sacrifice something to reach a common goal so they can get that ring. It was the perfect storm. That team is a reason why it clicked so well, so fast, because everything just fit perfectly. Even in Miami, you had, with Bosch being a power forward, and he wasn't really the stretch four at the beginning of that whole thing. So he occupied a certain space. LeBron occupied a different space. Wade occupied a different space. And it worked. It kind of was symbiotic. Cleveland, they asked Kevin Love to completely remake his game, which is something those other two teams didn't ask any of their players. No one on the Celtics had to completely remake their game. No one on the Heat had to. Kevin Love in Cleveland has had to completely remake his game. He is the third option where he used to be the first option. He can't operate in the post and work inside out. He always used to work in the post in Minnesota and then step out for threes. And he can't do that. They're just asking him to set up in the corner, catch and shoot. And that hasn't been his game prior to being in Cleveland. So that takes away a lot. And it says a lot about him for not being able to adjust. But the one thing Brad Stevens is really, really good at as a coach is getting guys to do the things they do well, very well. He talks to Marcus Smart. Marcus Smart, you go do the things that you do and just play your game. You be you. So if there's one thing that makes me think, yeah, we could get Kevin Love, it's that Brad Stevens knows this is your game. You play your game. You do you, and we'll figure it out. And so I think they could get Love, and especially if they can get him for relatively cheap. And I'm saying not giving up a guy like Jay Crowder. You can't give up Crowder in this scenario. Maybe a couple of these draft picks, maybe some of the a couple of young players, I don't know. But I think there's a scenario where you could get Love. And defensively, they have shown that they can work with lesser defensive players.
But here's the thing. They've shown that they can work with lesser defensive players. But that works in the regular season. It's the lesser defenders get exposed in the playoff. Like, think about Jared Sullinger. He was fine defensively all year, and then he gets in the against the Hawks, and he's almost unplayable because he cannot guard someone with the versatility of Al Horford, Paul Millsap, guys who can stretch to the three. And Kevin Love, I think, comes with some of those same questions, where regular season, sure, he's passable. You can, with Jay Crowder, Avery Bradley, Marcus Smart, you can have a really good defense. But it's when they get to the playoffs and guys are just attacking pick and rolls with Isaiah Thomas and Kevin Love that becomes an issue. So yeah, I right now I would lean toward no, the Celtics should not trade the number three pick or even think about trading the number three pick for Kevin Love. It's too risky. The whole thing they've done before now is stay away from risk, keep your options open until you can get that superstar trade. And Kevin Love at this stage, we don't know exactly what he is. And if you trust Brad Stevens to put him back to the guy he was 2 years ago, yeah, maybe that happens. Maybe it doesn't. And maybe even if it does, his flaws are still too much to overcome in the playoffs when you're playing against great teams. So to me, that's a no. It's a tough no, because I think he still has the potential to go back to at least however many percent of that player he was 2 years ago in a different situation. And I do think Brad Stevens does a great job of highlighting people's strengths. And I do think with Kevin Love in the Celtics offense, it would be a game changer. But it's too risky. They've stayed away from risks, and they need to just – I would keep my options open until something less risky came along, unless you think Kevin Love helps you get somebody else. And then Kevin Love is your second or third piece, and maybe he's a different fit in your offense because Brad Stevens utilizes him better. But there's just a lot of questions about Kevin Love. And even if he'll play a lot better in Boston than he does in Cleveland, just too many questions for me.
Yeah, no, it's totally legit. It's so hard to see what Kevin Love is now because he's been not what he used to be for so long that it's impossible to say, is this who he is now, or would a better scenario?
I mean, this guy is playing behind Richard Jefferson in the starting lineup and behind Channing Frye in closing moments. Like, that is tough to stomach, even if he's in the worst fit possible.
Sure.
Like, but that should not be something that happens to somebody who's a top 10 or 15 player. And I think it's clear at this point he's not a top 10 or 15 player, or whatever people thought he was 2 years ago.
True. It's very true. But, you know, if there's a way, he's an upgrade over Jared Sullinger.
Yes. No, he's absolutely an upgrade. He might come to the Celtics and be the very best player on their team. Like, he would be either one or two or whatever. He'd be really good, and he's a really good offensive player. But I think the risk is just too much, because if he's not that good offensively, then he's not really helping you, and he just has flaws in his game that hurt, especially in the most pivotal moments, which is what the Celtics are building for. Yeah, it's like so far away to think about those questions, like how much is he going to hurt us in the Eastern Conference Finals? But those are the questions you need to have when you're building what you hope will one day be a contending roster.
Right. No, that I think that is a question. I don't think that's too far out to look. You're building a roster to go out there and contend. And like you said earlier, they are not close. They're not close. They look closer than they really are. But we're building towards that place where the guys that the Celtics get now aren't guys that they're sitting there trying to just make the team better. They're building for that next step to be a championship contender. The goal is to, within the next 3 years, be a contender, be a challenger to Cleveland or supplant Cleveland in the East. They want to get back to the top. So if they think Kevin Love can be that guy, and I think the question is, can they get Kevin Love for almost nothing? Can they lowball? What's Cleveland going to be looking
for?
The Celtics have a ton of picks. Like, the Celtics have a ton of picks, and we've said before they can't make all those picks. So if some of those picks are quote-unquote expendable, then look, we're talking about, you just said, in 16 and 23, those picks you're just hoping to get role players. Well, if you could turn those two picks maybe into Kevin Love somehow with some combination of other guys, that's a risk that you're willing to take. I'm not going to sit there and say you trade 3 and Jay Crowder for Kevin Love. That's insane. At this point, that's insane. But if you can get those lower first-round picks and you tell Cleveland, look, you can get a couple of role players, you can maybe draft some guys that can fit a little bit better and grow and be part of your next generation. And here is, I don't know, maybe it's Amir Johnson in his contract or something like that. Maybe there's some combination of guys that are palatable, and you bring him in and you let Jared Sullinger go, and he just kind of fills Jared Sullinger's role. And now that, to me, is a big upgrade for relatively nothing. I don't even know what Cleveland's going to want or if another team's going to come in and offer something good. I'm not sitting there saying that that's a palatable deal for them. But if it is a palatable deal, then I think you make that deal and deal with it.
Yeah, and I think they have to look at it like, we also have Tristan Thompson on big money. It's becoming clear that LeBron James should probably play 4 as he ages. We've got Kevin Love, who didn't play down the stretch against Toronto a lot of games and didn't play down the stretch of the most important game of the season in game 4 against Golden State. How do you keep him around when he's making $20 million a season? And how desperate are you to get other pieces and see what else is out there that you could maybe come down to the Celtics price, which I don't think they should give up 3. I don't think they should give up Crowder, although he's a better player than Crowder. Crowder's a guy, I think, who can be a part of a championship team. And Kevin Love, right now, it looks like he can get exposed once you get to that championship level of basketball.
Yeah, I think part of the other part of the Kevin Love discussion is, what else do you do? What else do you bring in? Because you can't just be Kevin Love and be like, hey, great offseason, guys, thanks. You have other things. You have other supplementary players. I think I might have just made up a word, but
supplementary? No.
Supplementary. Is that supplemental?
Complementary? Supplementary? Yeah, whatever. Whatever.
I might have just made up a word.
Podcast, we are the
We create language. We drive the conversation with words we make up.
We're so smart, we don't even know if words are words.
But the Celtics need to do other things. And part of getting Kevin Love would be getting somebody behind him that can kind of erase mistakes. And that brings us to some other Twitter questions. Connor Sharp, would you rather see the Celtics sign Whiteside or Horford to a max deal this summer? Elon Sim, should the Celtics sign Whiteside? We need a rim protector who can run the floor, or is lack of passing too much of an issue? So the Whiteside question kind of becomes relevant to this, because if you do go for Kevin Love on, say, a draft night trade, then you have another hole to fill. You have to have somebody behind him that can protect the rim. You can't be totally exposed. So does Whiteside come to Boston, or do you go for Horford? And if you go for Horford, if that's your target, then you're not going for Kevin Love, because that's duplicating a position. So I think it's Horford or Love. And then
although Horford and Love would kind of be an interesting combination. Horford could spread the floor. Love could operate in his more preferred areas. And then Horford plays D. That would actually be an interesting combination.
Yeah, it could be.
I would be intrigued by that combination. But yeah, Whiteside, Horford, those are names you're going to hear. Horford's older, obviously. Whiteside isn't that much younger, though. People think of him as like this second year type because he just kind of burst onto the scene last season. He's 27.
Yeah.
He's older than most people expect. Although I do think he has another level he can get to that he hasn't reached, and he has physical upside that's just ridiculous, and he has shot blocking ability that is absurd. I mean, he just swallows people's shots. So yeah. And then there's the character issues. What type of guy is he? Is he going to get his money and kind of be like, whatever, you know, I was in Lebanon 2 years ago. Who cares about this basketball thing? I got my $100 million contract. Let's put my feet up on the table.
Right. That's my biggest fear with Whiteside. I don't like his attitude necessarily. And I think he has a very high potential to be the get the money and become a different player type of guy. I'm really afraid of that.
You would really have to invest into seeing what type of guy he is, because the reason he wasn't in the NBA for a while and the reason he had to take such a long path back was because he was a knucklehead. I mean, if you remember, there were a couple of years ago when Whiteside cheap shot at Kelly Olynyk, and Isaiah Thomas, who was Whiteside's teammate, goes, "Yeah, yeah, that's Hassan I know." And like, yeah, Hassan's gonna lose his mind at some point. Like, I knew that was coming. So yeah, there are issues there and questions, but he's an undeniable talent, and I think a lot of these questions again. Horford's 30. Yep. Yes, he's going to be worth the money right away. He's really good, but he's the type of guy who, unless you're going to contend right away, by the time you get good enough to contend, he's going to be closer to the backside of his career. And who wants to be paying him, you know, $20 million a year when he's not that next piece to lift you up to championship contention? And that's the thing here. Like, and it hurts the Celtics that they have so much cap space this year. Like, if it had been any other year with a better free agent class, with fewer suitors for Durant or whoever it is, they would be in a much better position. But because everyone has cap space and because the free agent class isn't great and really is pretty bad if you eliminate some of the really top guys, then it's a tough year to have a lot of money. And that works against them. But, you know, next year the free agent class is going to be awesome again. And if you just keep the flexibility and keep moving that forward, there are going to be years when if that opportunity doesn't come along this year, maybe it comes along next year. And that should be the Celtics mentality, I think, is wait for that home run mentality. And I don't know if Whiteside's it. I don't know if Horford's it. I don't know if Kevin Love's it, unless you get other pieces along with them. Those aren't guys that by themselves will lift you to that next level.
Yeah, I agree. And that does make it tough. And another question here from Hector Gomez. No superstar this offseason. However, see an offseason with signings, defensive center, Barnes to play stretch four. I'm not a big Harrison Barnes guy. I have this feeling that he's going to be the next Jeff Green.
I don't know if he'll be the next Jeff Green, because he's already shown the ability to fit into a great team and know his limitations. And, you know, you can win with Harrison Barnes. I'm not so sure you can win with Jeff Green. But I'm not sure he has another level he gets to. And I don't think Harrison Barnes, like those other guys, but probably even to a greater extent, he's not the guy who's going to get you to championship level. And he might be a guy who you overpay him, and a couple years from now, you're like, why the heck did we give Harrison Barnes that money? And when I think about guys like that, I think back to last summer when the Celtics had internal conversations about whether to go after Danny Green, Damari Carroll, and ultimately decided that going after guys like that wasn't in their best interest. They would rather have that money to save for the flexibility. And guys like those are very good players, Danny Green, Damari Carroll. And especially before DeMar Carroll had the injuries, when he was coming after a great season with the Hawks. And Harrison Barnes is kind of like that, where he's a good player. He's probably not good enough that you want to commit those assets. And a lot of this is keeping flexibility, because you want to build that championship team, and you have to find those championship players. And obviously, you can win a championship with Harrison Barnes, but he's the fifth, sixth best player on that team right now. So it's not like he's one of your one, two, or three guys, I don't think.
At Old School Shoes, better fit for the C's, Biyombo or Nerlens Noel? A lot of buzz about Biyombo. He had a decent series against Cleveland after Valanciunas went down with the ankle injury. I don't know how much money he's going to get. I have this feeling like Biyombo is going to be the guy that maybe most benefits from this crazy salary cap explosion. That he's going to get a contract that is stupid. We're going to look at that money and we'll be like, this is even for this summer, which is going to be some of the most unexpected, ridiculous money we're ever going to see. He's going to get something that I'm afraid of what he's going to get. I don't think he's okay. I'd rather have Nerlens Noel. Obviously, I think Noel is a far better player and a much bigger upside than Biyombo. But Biyombo, right thing, right, again, I guess right guy, right time, right stage. Somebody, I don't know, somebody stupid enough to give him ridiculous money.
I think here's the thing. He's a guy you can win with. If you start him at center, you can win, but he needs the right situation. He can barely catch passes to him. Like guys on his team joke about his hands routinely and how bad they are. And yes, he had some great games. He's kind of like Tristan Thompson to me, where for Cleveland, Tristan Thompson is a great fit because he gets offensive rebounds. He doesn't need the ball. He just does the dirty work. He can switch. He can guard people. He fits. But if he were on another team, Tristan Thompson all of a sudden doesn't look so good. If you have another offensively limited guy with Tristan Thompson, that's tough. And so Biyombo is one of those guys where I don't know if he's going to be worth his next contract because he has some serious shortcomings. But the things he does well are, I will say, a lot of things that win games. He rebounds, he blocks shots, he can move his feet on the perimeter. He does a lot of things that can help you and that can help your team win games. But he's another guy. I just don't think he's good enough to pay him the money he's going to be worth. And there's a lot of guys like that. Like this free agent class, which is why I think it's a tough year for the Celtics to have so much money. There just aren't a lot of guys that really move the needle. And yes, Biyombo would help. He would absolutely help with him this year instead of, you know, Sullinger. Maybe they have, instead of a top five defense, one of the top two or three defenses. So he would help, but he just doesn't move the needle enough to where you want to invest in him over the next however many years, I don't think. And that's my opinion. Maybe the Celtics think otherwise, but I'm not high on a lot of these free agents for a lot of those same reasons.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. It's all very similar. They all have a very similar downside, which is they'll be asking for big money, but they're not going to be contributing.
Yeah. And the thing, if you get Biyombo now, you limit your flexibility to go out and get that big superstar whenever you have a chance to.
You can get a guy like Biyombo another way somewhere down the road, I think.
Yeah. Or. So to me, you try to keep open all the flexibility you've done. And that's been the most important thing for the Celtics in rebuilding, is keeping the flexibility to get a superstar whatever way possible, whether it's trades, free agency, whatever else. And you have to keep that cap space and not spend it, I think, on guys like Biyombo.
Right. Alexander Moylan, two parts to this. The first part, the C's will surely address the need for more three-point shooting this offseason, right? The answer, I believe, would be yes. There are.
I would have said the same thing last year, too, though. And then, nope. not at all.
I think there are guys out there that might be able to address that issue.
No, maybe R.J. Hunter becomes a shooter.
Maybe.
Steps into the rotation. You never know how these guys will develop.
I'd love to see it. I'm a big R.J. Hunter guy. Obviously, everybody knows that. I think he can. I think he can do that, and I think he's got the right attitude to do that. There are guys out there like Ryan Anderson who might come in and be a fit. He's going to be pretty sought after. Probably the same scenario that you've been talking about, though. He's going to want big money, but he's going to contribute, but is he the guy that gets you to that next level? No, not necessarily, but he's a good role player. So, but I do think the need for more three-point shooting is obvious. That's going to be an obvious target for Danny Ainge. They're going to want to address that. I don't know if they can or will. They want to do a lot of things that might not happen. So we'll see about that. The second part of his question also, Isaiah Thomas to Rio, realistic? Marcus, perhaps? Let's start talking about Isaiah Thomas, because Isaiah Thomas tweeted out he wants to be part of Team USA. He'd love to do it. But you don't have a lot of little guys in that scenario. I don't think Isaiah Thomas will go to the Olympics.
No.
But enough guys are starting to drop out where we might get to a point where they start looking at the second-tier guys like
to invite to training camp. Yeah, they've already invited Damian Lillard after the 30 candidates or whatever came out. And I think the list of guys who aren't playing already is Chris Paul in the backcourt. Chris Paul, Stephen Curry, Russell Westbrook, James Harden. So there are a lot of guards that aren't going. It would surprise me if he got an invitation. I don't think there's much chance at all of him actually going to Rio. I do think he's. I mean, there are 30 guys invited. There are guys like Gordon Hayward, guys that probably aren't as accomplished as Isaiah Thomas is at this point. And there was Rudy Gay's on the list. So it hurts him that he didn't have any Team USA experience previously. It hurts him that he plays guard, where there are tons of great, great guards that are American. And it hurts him, I think, that, you know, he's 27. How much upside is there for them to invite him in to the fold when right. by the next time the Olympics comes around, he's 30, a 5'9", 31-year-old who might right. might have lost a step, and who knows how good he'll be by then. Right. So,
But Marcus Smart is already part of the select team. He might be more likely to kind of fill in if it got to that level, if enough guys dropped out. So the suggestion that Marcus Smart might be in there perhaps might be a little bit more realistic because he's already in there scrimmaging against those guys. At Beast from the NE, thoughts on IT wanting to rep Team USA, good for development, recruiting. Recruiting now is an interesting question if he could do it, because we know he wants to recruit. There's a question about fatigue or injury. Yeah, of course. And Isaiah Thomas has to work so hard to get his offense that maybe playing in a tournament like this adds to the fatigue, the overuse, and all of that. But let's not pretend that Isaiah Thomas isn't playing basketball right now. So he's out there with his pro-ams. He's out there repping in Seattle. He's playing basketball. So
I think these questions are getting too far ahead, too. Like, I don't see any scenario where he would actually be on the team that plays in Rio. Maybe there's a slight chance where he gets invited to the training camp and plays for a week or two or whatever it is. But I just don't see him making that final team. So, yeah.
A couple other quick questions before we wrap this up. Which player, this is from at Gerald
Hold on,
K.
But back to the recruiting. Well, the question about recruiting. Isaiah Thomas, never shy about announcing his recruiting plans to the world, has now announced that he's going to do whatever he can to bring Kevin Durant to Boston. And
yes, that's true.
And it's funny to me because, yes, that could help, having an all-star call you. And Isaiah is a really likable guy. He's always happy, always has a smile on his face. He's friends with almost everyone. And so maybe that can help. But it's funny, like, Isaiah Thomas is going to call him and be like, look, man, come to Boston. We have a 48-win team. Brad Stevens is awesome. And then Russell Westbrook's going to call and be like, come back to Oklahoma City. I'm much better than Isaiah Thomas. And we were just one win from getting to the finals and probably winning the championship. So, yes, it's cool that Isaiah Thomas is going to recruit Kevin Durant. Yes, someone should get a raise at Legal Seafoods for the perfect marketing ploy of saying they
all
would
the
have
crab legs.
Free crab legs. I mean, that person deserves a raise, a corner office. That was probably more publicity for a marketing stunt than Legal Seafoods has gotten in a while. I don't know of any other ad Legal Seafoods could have done that would have gotten that much buzz. So that person deserves a raise. But back to the Durant thing. And Isaiah will call him. Isaiah, maybe it'll help. Maybe he even thinks, you know, I got to get away from Russell Westbrook because Russell annoys me, man. That guy is tough to deal with on a daily basis. Who knows? But I think that the biggest things for the Celtics are having Brad Stevens, a great coach, and the tradition of Boston, the Eastern Conference. I don't know if Isaiah Thomas, as good as he is high on that list just because the Stephen Curry is going to call from Golden State and Russell Westbrook's going to call from
right.
The Thunder,
everybody's going to call.
Tony
everybody's going to call.
Tim Duncan and LaMarcus Aldridge and Kawhi Leonard. Although I don't know if Kawhi even has a phone. He might just like have someone call for him. Yeah.
Yeah. Gosh, Kawhi. Look, everybody's going to recruit Kevin Durant. And I don't know. It's interesting to see the scenarios that are presenting themselves. I think it makes sense that he goes back for a year. The big question for Kevin Durant is Westbrook going to stick around? And because Westbrook's a free agent next summer. And all of the talk is Westbrook to LA. Like that's some people are treating it as a foregone conclusion. That he'll go to LA, and that then that's leading some people to say that Durant will go to LA first and then wait for Westbrook to go there. But why don't you just stick in Oklahoma City? If that's going to be the case, just stay there. But
Durant ain't going to LA. If he goes to LA, I'll be shocked.
That'd be really,
you know, people
I
used
would...
to say the same thing about Kevin Love. And then it's like, well, he's playing with LeBron James guys. He's not going to go play with Julius Randle and D'Angelo Russell. Like, come on, guys. We got to be realistic here. People look at LA, and right now that's a franchise in disarray and a franchise that has a long way to go. And yeah, it's LA. Sure, that used to mean probably a lot more. I'm not sure it
doesn't mean
powerful enough to mean anything when the Lakers are trying to court guys like Kevin Durant. And maybe it means more for Russell Westbrook because it's fashion or whatever.
But
these guys want to win. At this stage in his life, I'm sure Kevin Durant, if he leaves, it's going to be about the best chance to win a championship because that's the one thing he doesn't have right now.
Look, we look at Westbrook right now. He is in Oklahoma City. Is it the smallest market or one of the smallest markets out there? And he's getting a lot of endorsements. He's got the Jordan brand endorsements. He's got the Mountain Dew stuff. He's out there. So he doesn't need to go to LA to be known. People know who Westbrook is. And that's part of today's era. That's part of the social media era. People on Twitter, people on Instagram, they know who he is. And as long as you've got those big followings, then you could play anywhere. You could play in the middle of nowhere. And if you've got a big social media following, look at Damian Lillard up in Portland. That's not a big market. But he is popular, and he gets endorsements, and he's out there. So going to L.A. or New York, it's not as important to the agents who drove those things as it used to be. You just got to be good. And every NBA market, the only reason the market size matters is how much money the local broadcast is in charge. That's it. That means that those owners make more money. But for the players, you can be anywhere. And you'll get some recognition. Like Giannis Antetokounmpo is going to get like the next wave of Greek freak like ads. People know who he is, and he's going to if he becomes what he can become and becomes this super crazy athletic, good, great player, then he can stay in Milwaukee and be a superstar and get all of the ads. So it doesn't matter where they go anymore. So I don't think Kevin Durant doesn't need to go to L.A. How many more ads does Kevin Durant need? He's everywhere.
Doesn't he have a $300 million shoe contract?
Yeah. So, I mean, come on. That's not necessary. A couple more questions here. Which player are you most excited about for next season that is currently on the Celtics roster? That's from @Gerald_K. I'm excited from a what next step can they take type of scenario. I'm looking at the younger guys like RJ Hunter. What can he become? I'm kind of excited to see what he can become. But obviously, you know, I'm excited to see like Jay Crowder play again and see what improvements he can make to his game, because he made some real good strides. And I want to see what he does to improve his offense and become maybe a little bit more versatile offensively and maybe improve his jump shot even more, because he took a big step forward with his jump shot last year. Let's see what he can become next season while maintaining his defense and getting into maybe one of those all-defensive teams. He just missed the all-defensive second team. So I think he can really take another step forward. So those are the guys I'm kind of more focused on.
Marcus Smart to me is the one.
Yeah, that's
because
a good one.
He's got a lot of physical potential, and of all their guys on their team, he is the one who has star potential. And obviously he's a long way away offensively, but this is the first summer he's had since he got to the NBA. Last year he had the finger injury, so this is like the first time, and I think that really hurt him shooting wise. So I'm excited to see what he does in year three when, you know, maybe he'll start to take another step as a point guard, or maybe he doesn't. And maybe he is just going to be that versatile defense first, not a great offensive player forever. And maybe that happens. But I think year three is really important for him, because if he continues to show star potential and he makes another stride, then that's a game changer. But yeah, Marcus Smart's a guy for me just because I think he has more room to grow than anybody else on the Celtics roster.
And Gerald also asks, give me optimism on James Young. I dare you.
He is still the youngest Celtic returning, and he's long and he can theoretically shoot. And did you see that recently he handed out bottles of water in Flint, Michigan, his hometown, which
yes.
is a really nice thing. So once good karma hits, he's probably going to average 15 points a game next year.
All right, we'll go with that. I'm not gonna step on that at all. Last topic I want to talk about real quick before we go. To me, one of the most amazing developments of the past few months in the NBA has been that Kevin Garnett is on Instagram, and it is good. He has the most private person in the world, in the NBA world, is Kevin Garnett. For him to be on social media is mind-blowing.
Stunning.
And for him to be sharing these moments, the photo of him, Paul Pierce, and Rajon Rondo, oh my God.
Yeah.
Like, that was crazy to see those guys back together. First of all, no Ray Allen.
Naturally.
No shock there. But that is just amazing to me to see KG out there dropping these Instagram bombs left and right. It's awesome. He's got an awesome Instagram page.
He might have the best Instagram page for a Celtic follower. It's up there. I mean, he's thrown out old pictures of him with Paul Pierce. He's thrown out old pictures from the locker room with like him, Ray Allen, Pierce, Rondo. Maybe Drake was. I think Drake was in that picture too. He lets you into a side of his personality that he's never let anyone into, and it is. It's really good and really shocking, because that guy has kept everything secret forever. Mm-hmm. Like during the summer, he just like goes into a cave, but nope. Now he's showing you that he's hanging out with Paul Pierce and Rajon Rondo, And yeah, if there's one thing this podcast has taught you, it's to go follow Kevin Garnett's Instagram page, which you should have already been following a long
time ago.
Should
be doing, and if you haven't, go do it now. Now, go. Another thing you should be doing now is giving us ratings, 5-star ratings on any sort of, if you're on iTunes, give us a little review on iTunes. Tell everybody how awesome you think we are. Give us the 5 stars and help us out, because that helps us out. It publicizes the show. And
yeah, help us out because that helps us out.
Help us out because it helps us out.
Only reason you know.
Look, we're doing these shows for you guys. We do it for you. So help us out. That's all.
Help us out by helping us out.
Help us out by helping us out. That's the show, everybody. Thanks for listening. Lots more coming up in the coming weeks. Lots more draft to talk about. Who knows? There's going to be trade rumors. Once this NBA season wraps up, probably Monday night, when the Warriors take out the Cavs in what has been a lackluster NBA Finals. More coronation than anything. We'll see what happens after that. The trade rumor is going to pop up. And we're going to be here to talk about it on the Rain and Jays podcast.